Hi there, I'm Chris Stashew.
I'm Mike White.
And this is Father Malone.
And we are the hosts of Dreams for Sale, a once-a-month look at the Twilight Zone 1985, otherwise known as that show that we all wish would have gotten better before it got worse, but boy, maybe this is the dip. Maybe there's a climb. Who knows? We'll find out, though, on this episode when we're talking about two episodes from the show, the fifth and sixth episodes of the third season, actually. Those two episodes are titled Dream Me a Life and Memories.
Portrait of a man having a bad dream. His name, Roger Simpson Leeds. Place of residence, a retirement home. Roger Simpson Leeds, who since the death of his wife 3 years ago, has dedicated himself to living a life in which he touches no one and no one touches him. But now contact has been made, and Mr. Leeds is about to find himself touched by the Twilight Zone.
So Dream Me a Life is directed by Alan King, written once again by J. Michael Straczynski. It stars Eddie Albert as a man. Who lives in an old... The fuck? Who cares? God damn it. Like, this show is doing a really good job of giving us no reason to care by these episodes that are, once again, nebulous in what they're trying to tell us, and it takes 23 minutes to get there. I don't want to be Mr. Negative, but...
I like this one.
I didn't mind this one. I was especially glad that Barry Moore showed up. I thought that was really nice. I like him
Hell
a lot.
Yeah.
I liked him in The Changeling. I mean, I remember him all the way back from the original Twilight Zone. Was he on Space 1999?
Yes, he was.
Okay. And I like the relationship between him and Eddie Albert. Eddie Albert probably took him a little while to wash the taste of scenery out of his mouth from like at least one of those scenes where he's just moaning so hard. But
that's Eddie Albert.
Yeah, it is Eddie Albert. That's his thing, man. If he's not yelling at his gorgeous Hungarian wife for no good reason, because you know
she won't bail that hay.
Really good in the sack. Yeah, but yeah, now he's screaming about how he wants to help this lady and how his wife died and now her husband's dead and then he gets to live in her dreams, but then helps her out, I guess. So
he was summoned by her dead husband.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
Who the fuck knows? It's this kind of like very lazy storytelling that is just become beyond pervasive. The show is now trafficking in it, like exclusively trafficking in lazy storytelling. And while to your point, Father Malone, I kind of like this segment more than the last two. That is saying so little that to say that much is almost more than this episode deserves.
Well, I actually thought at the end it was kind of a sweet little, rumination on
it is
on grief, you know, like at least in for the first time in a long time that we've had an episode take a stand on something that grief can be crippling and, we all need to sort of help each other through it. So I liked that. I liked that, like the nightmare sequences, which are shot in black and white, sort of on a stage, obviously, like I thought that was at least visually interesting, which is the first time I could say that this season. I will say, however, that seeing Eddie Albert running around in a dream screaming and then waking up screaming, like all I could think about was the movie Dreamscape.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Like even like I'm watching him in the nightmare and I'm thinking like, God, this is a lot like Dreamscape. And then when he woke up, like, I was like, oh my God, this is exactly like Dreamscape. Made me want to watch Dreamscape.
Damn,
I didn't hate this one, ultimately. I just think it was slight, but at least it was something.
It was okay.
Yeah, it was all right. But yeah, you're right. I fucking loved Dreamscape. I
want to
see it. Yeah, I want to see
David Patrick Kelly at the
David Patrick Kelly Snake Man.
Yeah. Or like even my favorite part is when they're on a trolley together and he's like, he's got nunchucks and he's dressed like a ninja. And he's like, I've walked into the dragon 153 times.
So good.
I have never seen. What's the for?
Jesus Christ.
Hey, man, what do you want?
You gotta go see
me?
These movies, man.
Yeah. Let me just add
time during the day.
Is there now? Oh, yeah. Please tell me. Oh, yes. All of this time you magically all of a sudden don't have anymore.
Like Dreamscape is worth your time.
it's not like I'm doing correct. If I were doing something other than going and fucking myself on a daily basis, I would have time to watch films like Dreamscape, along with the other multitude of films that I have yet to see, including Elvis films.
Oh, come on, man.
Mm.
Well, you're going to have to watch.
That's those. True. But I will say this story versus the last two, it does have somewhat of a point to Father Malone's point, which is really sad that that's something kind of worth mentioning, that it actually takes a stance on something.
Yeah.
Cause this is a show that like
point of view,
this like, show regularly has something to say. It was almost expected that the show has, I mean, like The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street has a lot to say.
Sure.
And yet this show is just like, what, storytelling with a purpose? You know, homilies and, you know, stories that people can learn from? No. Stories where you spin your wheels for 20 minutes about a dead lover on the radio? Much more important.
Yeah, I, you know.
Night
I
don't Flight know. Or Night Drive or Night Song or whatever the hell that one was called.
Night Song.
Night Song, yeah. I mean, a lot of these episodes have a lot of, like, grief. They're talking about grief.
Yeah.
Right?
These writers, they watched a lot of people die, man.
Yeah. Especially in Nam.
I was about to say, were you in Da Nang? That's this show. This show is like, it oscillates between I lost my wife, I lost a kid, or I lost it all in Vietnam. Or all at once. Or all three.
Yeah, right. Oh, boy. Dream me a life.
Dream me, something. Huh? Yeah, dream me a sale, man.
You know, this is a weird coincidence. Barry Morris and Robin Aidman, who's now the narrator for this season of The Twilight Zone, were both in a series called The Star Lost. You guys ever seen that show?
Mm-mm.
Harlan Ellison created the show, right?
Now, that is not surprising that you have seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yes, I did, because... Doug Trumbull did the special effects, wasn't it?
He sure did. And then, and if you go back and watch it, which is really hard to find,
I managed to track it down and but it's rough because it looked like it was shot on video.
Yes. And I believe it was. And, the series was created by Cord Wainer Bird.
Yep.
Which, was Harlan Ellison's, nom de plume when things weren't going his way. And like evidently whatever the plot of it is, basically, like right before they started shooting and he had written every episode, they were like, why don't they get to the end of this season plot point at the end of the first episode? And he was like, the whole series is about that thing. Like if we do that in the pilot, then there's nothing. And then he took his name off. Anyway, this episode made me think about a lot better entertainment, I guess, and lesser.
Yeah. So on that note, let's talk about the next episode, Memories.
Mary McNeil, dealer in dreams and memories, to whom the uncovering of past lives is the greatest good she can render to a forgetful humanity.
Your name is Mary McNeil, but you have had other names before this.
8:57 p.m., and Mary McNeil makes another attempt to discover a previous life. However, the journey she is about to take is to a different place, a land whose borders are defined by the region we call The Twilight Zone.
So Memories is the sixth episode of the third season. It is directed by Rizgar Bujaski, and it stars, I don't know if I feel like I got close. It stars Barbara Stock as Mary McNeil, a woman, a dealer in dreams and memories, as the show likes to say. I believe she's a hypnotherapist, and she helps people do dream or past life regressions is what it would be called. And she helps... She gets so explain to me what happens. She past life regresses herself. She unregresses herself. She unregresses herself into another timeline.
Yes. All these things.
Shirley MacLaine's book came out, because that was like the first time that I remember anybody talking about past lives. And it was just like, I remember everybody was just like, Shirley MacLaine, she's a kook.
Right.
1983. So this was right there.
And this is 88, which is when, as far as like my perception of things, New Age started to become a real thing, just not just for burned out hippies anymore.
Vortices, like people, bro. Yeah, vortices, man.
Yeah, people in the suburbs started
Sedona, like, we're all going. I got my crystals in my hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this was around when like New Age music started really taken off, and you got your George Winstons and your Yannis and all these people.
Don't forget John Tesh.
How could I ever forget John Tesh? Yeah. So my take on it is that somehow she slips out of our universe into another universe where everybody knows their past lives except for her. And I was very happy to see Nigel Bennett show up as the agent that she's talking to. I mostly know him as Michelle O'Shea from the film Top of the Food Chain, where he is a banjo and banjo accessory salesman. I love that guy. And he shows up all the time. He's got tons of credits, but he plays Dastardly and Sinister really well. I love his voice.
Yeah, I remember him from Forever Night, that vampire cop television series.
Oh, yeah.
The most ridiculous premise of all time. Like, you can only go to night court to get these guys convicted.
He just showed up in Jupiter's Legacy, that one and done show from Netflix, which I think Netflix loves your podcast, the one season show, because they are just about doing shows and canceling them after one season just for you, buddy.
You know what the funny thing is? I don't want to cover any Netflix shows. You know why? Because if I ever go to my Netflix app and I'm like, play something for me. It's like, you like Netflix content, right? Maybe something else. No. Netflix content. Maybe something else for a change. No. See, we have this movie that we made. It's a Netflix exclusive. But maybe I'd like to watch. No, Netflix.
No. Have you seen Mank yet? Well, why don't you watch it again?
You're telling me you haven't seen House of Cards three times already? Watch it again.
Here it is.
What is your favorite Netflix category, Father Malone?
Watch again.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Watch Mank again.
Yeah, no, yeah. There's an entire list of things I've already watched. Like, watch this again.
Are you Pauline Kael? Would you like to watch Mank again? It's funny that this, like, look, I have my own feelings on past life regression. I frankly kind of put a lot of stock in it. Don't laugh me out of the room for that. It's fine. It's whatever. It's my beliefs. I like this episode's treatment of it because this episode's treatment is not what I was expecting. However, it still kind of spun its wheels.
Yeah, I actually think the episode was too ambitious for its own good. I think there was a world here that was clearly well thought out, but they do not have time in 22 minutes to sort of get to that. So, I mean, ultimately,
this is an hour long episode. It should have been.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
right.
You know, too ambitious is better than no ambition. So, like, I appreciated it on that level, but, you know, wheel spinning is a good sort of description. Like, nothing really happens. Like, they only kind of focus on this premise. This woman who believes in past lives and nobody else does ends up in a world. We already remember we did this with there was an episode with a woman was like an accountant or something, or no, a secretary. And everyone's like, oh wow, you're a secretary?
That's the Riker episode.
Yeah,
he does the Riker maneuver in that one.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that was Pam Dauber, right? As the secretary?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, can she type?
But can she type?
Can she type? Yeah.
There we go.
This show, what's weird about this show is that, like, it's repeated itself so many times now with, like, the same themes. And it's gotten to the point now where they've repeated it so many times that there's no way that this is going to land. There's no way that this is going to be entertaining. There's no way that we're going to watch this segment and go, man, this is really good. We're just going to go, man, I wish it was this, or I wish it was that. And if it's a show that's not this one, that's one thing. The show can't control that. But the fact that we're talking about literal episodes of this own show, about how it did it better, that's a problem. That's actually a real problem.
Yeah, you know, you look back at the writers in the first two seasons, and if you look at their credits, it always seems like The Twilight Zone was the exception to their career. Like, you know, they just like, I can do some Twilight Zones. Whereas this season feels a lot like journeyman type writers who, like, if you go look at their credits, they did one episode of this and one episode of that and one episode of this other thing. They're just like, you know, television people. So they're probably not the best people to bring to the Twilight Zone. You know, like, if they're ready to write an episode of Full House and Beretta and this, like, you know, maybe they're not, this ain't their genre.
Well, that was the thing I think we talked about, even when we talked about the Jordan Peele version of the Twilight Zone, was like, you guys had all this time to, like, cull great short stories and, you know, get really good sci-fi writers, maybe people that have written for television before, maybe not, maybe stories that you want to adapt, maybe not. But like, you know, we started off with Harlan Ellison. We had some real luminaries. We had luminaries behind the camera, in front of the camera, behind the typewriter. And I'm not seeing those this season. I'm not seeing adaptations of stuff. Even, I want to say, the last episode that we really liked, the one with Shelley Duvall. I mean, that was an adaptation.
Saucer of Loneliness.
Yeah, that was a short story adaptation, if memory serves. So
yeah, it was. You go back to the original Twilight Zone. Plenty of those episodes are based on previously written work. A lot of the times, by the author like adapted it.
Oh yeah.
But it, you know, there was a wellspring that they recognized and went to, as opposed to this and like the Jordan Peele one. Like, well, now we got a series, we got to write some episodes. Let's think of some Twilight Zone-y type stuff.
What's weird is who directed this episode too has like a pedigree of working on like really well-known stuff too. Like I was curious because like Rizard Bujaski is the last name you expect to see involved in a Twilight Zone product, given how, I don't know, Polish his name sounds. And given that, you know, this is an American-made product, Canadian-made.
Canadian-made.
He directed a bunch of stuff. One of his films was nominated for the Palme d'Or. Like, why are you working on this show? And why is it this episode? Like, why is it
funny, like,
bizarre episode?
This does seem the first episode in a while where I noticed the direction and that there was some thought behind it.
Yeah.
Although when they finally like grab her and are like interrogating her stuff, like I kept noticing the camera would just sort of slowly move to in between slats to look at this one bespectacled actor. Like they just did that same shot over and over again from different angles. I don't know.
Palme d'Or nominated.
Yeah.
Right.
Shoot your subject through a mesh.
Right. And meanwhile, the writer, like, to your guys' point, one episode of The Facts of Life, one episode of Charles in Charge, and then he goes on to The Twilight Zone, and then he goes to Night Court for, I don't know, how many, 13 episodes. So it's like...
He found his niche.
Yeah, exactly.
Second time we've mentioned Night Court and not in the same context.
Yeah. I think he was even a producer on Night Court, so he really got into that. And then that show, GVE, Good versus Evil, which I tried doing the rewatch of it. The version that I have is so shitty looking.
Same version I got. It's just dreadful.
I bought it when it was airing, I really liked it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I love the actors in it. I really love, why am I blanking on the Richard black Brooks guy? Thank you. He's so good.
Yeah. Even Clayton Rohner, who was one of those guys who was in everything in the 80s. And then just sort of disappeared. An actor who has completely changed the way I look at the word Lauper and Cyndi Lauper because of his pronunciation in Just One of the Guys. I'm Cyndi Lauper. So now every time I see Cyndi Lauper, I think Cyndi Lauper. And I just called her Lauper.
I have never seen.
It's pretty good.
Just One of the Guys?
It's pretty good.
Well, that and or GV.
Just One of the Guys. Yeah.
No, you should see both. They're both good.
Yeah.
Add it to the list, buddy.
Just One of the Guys will be an episode of The Projection Booth in December. So maybe by the time this episode comes out. December 2021, I should
clarify. GVE has Marshall Bell in it, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And everyone knows what Marshall Bell's ass looks like. If you've seen Nightmare on Elm Street 2, man, that's the coach's ball scene, and then he gets whipped on the ass with a towel a bunch.
I still haven't seen that one. I've only seen the documentary.
It's a good one.
It's a homoerotic.
It's a homoerotic dream / nightmare.
Yeah.
It is one of those films where I don't understand how anyone didn't know it was gay, because they all knew it was fucking gay. So
yeah. Oh yeah.
Stop you pretending, guys. Come on.
Yeah. You watched the documentary about the guy. I'm blanking on his name.
I have not. Scream Queen, I have not.
Scream Mark, Queen. Yeah, it's Mark really something. Good.
It's again one of those things where it's like, it's on the list. I'll watch it before I die. How's that?
Okay. Sounds good.
All I can ask for.
That's what I'll just tell people from now on. I'll just watch it before I die. Yeah, I got a little while. I don't know. Who knows, actually?
You're committed without any
week and a half.
Better get going, buddy.
If my calendar is correct, it's less than that, but maybe the leap years were off. I, you know, I think these two episodes are better than the last two, but man, we're really far in one direction from where we were. It's unfortunate. You know, yeah, I don't want to lament
I'm enjoying
it too
these
much,
comparatively.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's just at the end of the day with a show like this, similarly to Tales from the Crypt, the good stuff is remembered so positively that everybody just kind of forgets the bad stuff. And honestly, that's kind of okay in a way. Like, I'm not sure a lay person would go back and watch the show all the way through. They would go and watch Shatter Day or Wordplay and be like, yeah, that's good. And then you're like, I don't need to watch anything else. Or just watch the things that interest. Like, I don't think anyone, if they were reading the synopses of the episodes and read this one, they would be like, yeah, this is one I want to watch. They'd probably watch something like Shatter Day or even the Elvis episode. Like, those I think are more inherently interesting than this one, just based on the what the episode's talking about to begin with.
And I think that Elvis one was based on a short story as well. Mm-hmm.
Are You Lonesome right. Tonight?
Mm-hmm.
The short story. What's the movie called where he fights the bull again?
Stay Away Joe.
Stay Away Joe. Is that what it's based off of?
Yes.
What did it say?
100%.
Oh, boy. So are we done talking about these two episodes?
Yes. Sure.
No, I'm asking you guys.
I don't have anything to add.
No.
All right. So the next one is... The next one has a great name, so that's all I know. So that's right. On the next episode of Dreams for Sale, we're going to be taking a look at the 7th and 8th episodes of the 3rd season. Those episodes are titled The Helgramite Method. That's a good one.
Actually.
That's a good one, yeah. And Our Selena is Dying, which I assume is about Selena the singer from Corpus Christi.
Yes.
Has to be, yes.
It's a remake of an original Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, good. It can only disappoint.
Yeah.
It's also written by J. Michael Straczynski.
Right. Who's the only one this season, I think, with any sort of pedigree, who I kind of respect as a writer.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah,
but until then, where can people find you, Father Malone?
You can check me out over at fathermalone.com. I got links to all the crazy shit I engage in, including my monthly radio drama, Dark Destinations. So you can check me out over there.
What about you, Mike? Where can people find you when you're not here?
You can find me at the Projection Booth, which is available at projectionboothpodcast.com.
And as for me, you can find me on the internet at Christmas Claus on Twitter. This podcast, you can find it on Twitter at Dreams for Sale and Twilight Zone 85. Big thanks, as always, to Roxy Drive and Neutron Dreams for the music for the show, and we'll catch you on the next episode.